Thank you for joining us today. This is the Sub Rosa News Program. I am Dan Gougherty, and this program is being produced and recorded in Northern California, specifically Sacramento, California, the capital of the great state of California, the Golden State. This program and others that we hope to produce will be covering stories that don't receive a lot of publicity. Some of them admittedly do have publicity and are well covered, but we'll also cover cultural events and current events. Our hope is to give you something interesting to think about and ideas that you might not have heard in other formats. Today's main topic is going to be California's gubernatorial primary campaign, the race, which is on June 2nd, 2026. It's shaping up to be a very interesting race for several different reasons. One of which is that we're less than 2 months away from the June primary, and no one candidate has emerged as the favorite. There are about six candidates who all stand a very good chance to advance to the November primary. But before we get to the individual candidates, for people who may not be familiar with California's primary, let me give you a little background. In 2010, California voters approved a major change to their primary and election systems. Starting in 2012, first of all, primaries, voters could cross party lines. If you're a Democrat, you could vote for a Republican. You're a Republican, you could vote for a Democrat. That opened up the field quite a bit. But the more significant thing that happened in 2012 was the top two finishers in almost every race in the state, all the statewide elected offices, the senators, congressmen, assembly members, state senators, Board of Equalization. You go down the line, the top two finishers in the primary, regardless of party affiliation, would advance to the general election. So you had many instances, particularly in Democratic areas, where the top two finishers in the primary would be Democrats, and they would advance to the November election. It also happened in some Republican areas, the more rural areas, where the top two finishers would be Republicans. Aside from not having two parties in the general election, the third parties were basically eliminated. Now the third parties can appear on the primary ballot, like the Peace and Freedom, the Green Party. I think the American Independent Party is still kicking around out there. But if their candidates did not finish in the top two, they were essentially eliminated from advancing to the November general elections. Personally, I don't like the system. And the reason I don't like the system is it basically eliminates choice for voters. There have been several elections where I have chosen a third party candidate, most often the Green candidate, primarily as a protest vote, to be very frank. There might have been a Democratic candidate who was going to win, but I wanted to cast a protest vote. But with the state's top two finisher system, the third parties in California have effectively been eliminated. So they don't even exist, you know, realistically anymore. Some candidates will show up in some races, primarily in areas like San Francisco and Los Angeles. You get outside of there and other coastal areas, third parties are pretty much gone. So it eliminated that possibility for voters. I don't like it personally. I think it's anti-small d democratic. It doesn't give voters the choice in the general election, and it basically cements the two-party system. Regardless, that's the system we have here in California. So before we get into a little bit more detail on that race, let me just cover who the candidates are on the Democratic and Republican side. On the Democratic side, there are 8 candidates, and they're kind of in 2 tiers. In the top tier, top 4, are Congressman Eric Swalwell from the Bay Area, billionaire Tom Steyer, a Bay Area person and a former hedge fund manager, Katie Porter, the former congresswoman from Orange County, and Matt Mahan, who is the San Jose mayor and considered a moderate. The bottom tier, the other 4 candidates who are still appearing on the ballot and still have active campaigns but really have not gained any traction, are Xavier Becerra, the former Health and Human Services Secretary for President Biden, who was also an Attorney General in California and a congressman, Betty Yee, the former State Controller, Antonio Villaraigosa, the former mayor and assembly speaker, and Tony Thurman, who is the state school superintendent. Those bottom 4 really not have gained any traction to speak of. They're still on the ballot, and one candidate, Ian Calderon, dropped out before the filing date last week on March 7th at the urging of the state Democratic Party chair, Rusty Hicks, who wanted to clear the field. And we'll get to that reason in a couple minutes. So those are your 8 candidates, 8 Democratic candidates for California governor. Now, on the Republican side, there's a small, far smaller field. There are only 2. There are Riverside County Sheriff Chad Bianco and political commentator Steve Hilton. Both of these candidates are MAGA Republicans. They've aligned themselves with the policies and practices of President Trump. Now, you would think in a state like California, which is a solidly blue state, that they wouldn't have much of a chance of succeeding. And this is where the rub comes in. Now, in California, only about 25% of registered voters are registered as Republicans. About 45% roughly are registered with the Democratic Party. So the Democratic Party has a 2-to-1 advantage. But the balance of the rest of those voters are really, they're independents or not affiliated. And they tend to vote more conservatively, more moderately than the Democratic voters. Typically, they may align more with Republicans. So in this top 2 system, if you just think about the mathematics in your head, there's 25% of the registered voters that are Republican. And let's just say, for the sake of argument, that all the voters in the state, voted. Isn't going to happen, but for the purposes of this example, just think of that. So you have 25 voters, say, that are Republican, and they all vote. So polls are showing that Sheriff Bianco and Mr. Hilton are basically tied. So let's just say they each get half of that 25%, and then they pick up some independents. Now, on the other side, you have 45%, and, the top 4 are getting most of it, most of that vote, but they're only polling in the teens. And this was the reason why Rusty Hicks, the Democratic chairman for California, urged some of these lower tier candidates to drop out. Politicians being politicians, they ignored that, and, they're pressing on, which of course is their right. That's their right. So it is conceivable in California, which is considered a Democratic statehold, a Democratic stronghold, it is conceivable from a mathematical point of view, if these 8 Democratic candidates split the vote with no one picking up more than, say, 15 or 16%, it is conceivable, not likely, but it is conceivable that 2 Republicans could advance to the general election. Now, to me, this shows a real flaw in the top two system that California has. It would be much better, I think, from voters if there was a Democratic candidate, if there was a Republican candidate, if there was a Peace and Freedom candidate, if there was a Green Party candidate, if there was an American Independent Party candidate, and whatever other parties want to participate on the ballot. So this could potentially backfire on the Democratic Party in California. It is conceivable with eight candidates and participation rates being what they are, Republicans could conceivably advance two candidates to the November election. Now, polling shows that the top three candidates, and it varies day by day, obviously, in the lead are Eric Swalwell, Tom Steyer, and Steve Hilton. But recently, Matt Mahan has started showing up. He's been moving up in the polls, as has Sheriff Bianco. So there's really a horse race amongst those five candidates. Katie Porter was polling well, but she's kind of dropped off, although she is still in that top tier. And as we said, the other four Democratic candidates are polling in single digits. But, you know, you got four candidates polling in single digits. They could conceivably control 20% of the vote, which would siphon that from, say, Swalwell or Tom Steyer and make the margin much less for the Republicans to have to get in the first one or two positions. So going into the June primary, and we'll know more a week or so after, because California is notoriously slow for counting its ballots, we could have a race between two Republicans. That's not beyond the realm of possibility. Now, we'll know better as we get closer to the election. Swalwell has kind of been going up and down the last few days. He's had a few controversies about his residency in California. Steyer has been saturating the airwaves here. He is a billionaire, and he has a lot of money, and he's spending it on advertising. Katie Porter and Matt Mahan, they're not really out there, but they do have names established, and they have a following. So as we get closer to June 2nd, we'll have a better idea of where this all shakes out. But it is conceivable, and I cannot stress this enough, that Republicans could have two candidates on the ballot for governor in November, and the Democratic Party in a state where there's no Republicans holding any statewide office could win the governorship in November. We'll monitor this and update you in future programs. Let's take a break right now. I'm going to come back and talk about a couple of the congressional races here in Northern California that are gathering some national interest. Stick with us, and this is the Sub Rosa News Program. Thanks for staying with us. This is the Sub Rosa News Program. I'm Dan Gowerty. In this segment, we would like to discuss, or we will discuss, a couple of congressional races in the Sacramento area that are drawing national attention. And all of this, it needs to be stated, is done in the aftermath of voter approval Proposition 50, which changed the congressional districts, the boundaries, after President Trump urged lawmakers in Texas to gerrymander boundaries there in favor of Republicans. So California responded in kind and drew new districts, which many think will eliminate about 5 Republicans from the congressional delegation representing California. The first district I want to cover is District 7, which is in the Sacramento area. Now, the district pre-Proposition 50 and after Proposition 50 is solidly Democratic. So it's going to be a Democratic representative in all likelihood that will continue to represent this district. The incumbent is Doris Matsui, who has served the district for 20 years now. She was elected in a special election in 2005 after her husband, Bob Matsui, who had occupied the seat for about 25 years, died while in office. And Matsui has been a reliable Democratic representative and has voted along party lines, as one would expect. Now, the thing about Doris Matsui is she's a very quiet person. She doesn't hold town hall meetings. She hasn't maintained real high visibility within the district. And this has opened her up to criticism. And the other thing, and we'll just be very frank with you, is she's old. She's 81 years old when she runs for re-election, should she advance to the November ballot, which we fully expect her to. She will be 82 years old. Now, she is being challenged by somebody who is half her age, a Sacramento City Council member, Mai Vang, a fellow Democrat. Ms. Vang has been in office for about 4 years now, and she also held office with the Sacramento City Unified School District before going to the City Council in Sacramento. Now, Vang is challenging Matsui from the left. Vang has very progressive stances, and she has established herself as the antithesis of Doris Matsui, if you will. Ms. Vang criticizes Congresswoman Matsui for taking money from AIPAC, from Big Pharma, being in opposition to Medicare for All. And Ms. Vang is obviously to the other side. She is promises not to take any PAC money, not to take any AIPAC money in her campaign. She's funding primarily by small donations, and she's done a decent job. Now, the Congresswoman has a substantially larger war chest compared to Ms. Vang, and she'll be using that in the next couple months leading up to the primary. But this is the first time Congresswoman Matsui has been challenged legitimately. And Ms. Vang is actively campaigning. Now, when you look at the two candidates, there's an obvious difference in their style. Ms. Vang, who is about 40 years old, she is extensively using social media to reach out to younger voters and many disenchanted Democratic voters who are truly upset that the Democratic establishment, as Ms. Vang calls Matsui and others, have not really, in their mind anyhow, stood up to President Trump, and they want more action. And there is a brewing discontent within Democratic voters in the Sacramento area, myself being one, I'll admit to it. It wasn't until Ms. Vang entered the race that Congresswoman Matsui held her first town hall meeting. Now, I can't even recall when any time in the last 20 years Congresswoman Matsui held a town hall meeting. And that has become a common practice among Democratic and Republicans alike throughout the country. Matsui has largely avoided this. So Vang is really pressing her agenda. And it's likely that Vang and Matsui will be the top two finishers in California's primary in June, and they'll advance on to November. There are a couple other Democratic candidates who are not really campaigning. There is one Republican candidate on the ballot, and she is not doing any fundraising, and as far as I can see, not doing any campaigning. So this is going to be a race essentially between younger progressive Democrats versus older establishment Democratic Congress members, and it's gained quite a bit of national attention. So keep an eye on this one. It could be an upset in the making, although Matsui has suddenly, magically, become more visible since Bang entered the race. That's an interesting race, and we'll keep an eye on it, and we'll report on it further as we move towards the primary and towards the general election in November. Now, the other race that's also gaining national attention in this proposition, post-proposition environment, is California's 3rd and 6th. We'll get to the 3rd in another program, but let's focus on California's 6th district. And that is a district that now has been reduced in size. It was previously a district that touched on portions of Sacramento County and adjacent Placer County, but then it stretched over to the Nevada border, and it went all the way down almost to Los Angeles along the California-Nevada border. Very conservative district. It was represented since 2022 by Republican Congressman Kevin Kiley. Solidly Republican conservative area. Mr. Kiley got the endorsement of President Trump, then ex-President Trump in 2022 over former Sacramento County Sheriff Scott Jones, who was also a MAGA Republican, and that pretty much ensured his success in 2022. He was easily reelected in 2024. But now in the proposition, post-Proposition 50, Kiley's really had to change. It's astounding to watch. This is a congressman. He's an intelligent guy, Ivy League educated, a local person made good, if you will. And he was really MAGA, all in, no two ways about it. But once Proposition 50 came into being, he changed his tune. I was watching what is MS Now, it was MSNBC last fall, when before Proposition was voted on, and all of a sudden I see him on with Katie Turr. I mean, really, this is a guy who was all over Fox News, and now he's appearing on MSNBC, and of course he appeared on CNN. He said early on that he would vote to release the Epstein files. He criticized Speaker Mike Johnson for adjourning Congress during the shutdown. So he definitely moved himself, or he tried to move himself to the center. After several months of speculation of where he would run, there was some speculation that he would run against fellow Republican and a MAGA conservative, Tom McClintock. Ultimately, when the filing deadline came down last week, he said he would run in the sixth district, which has five other Democratic candidates, two of which are really viable candidates. Now, the other thing that Kiley did that was really interesting, and some would say cynical, myself included, is he said he would not run as a Republican. Instead, he put a no-party preference or independent label on himself, although he will continue to caucus with the Republicans. So, to me, it's a Hail Mary. He's trying to make himself look as if he's independent, free of the MAGA influence, in a district that has a solid Democratic registration advantage. Now, Mr. Kiley has a huge, and I mean huge, financial advantage. He has about $2 million in his campaign war chest. And his other two opponents, the two Democratic primary opponents that are well-funded and well-regarded are former California State Senator Dr. Richard Pan, who was a leading voice for vaccinations, which you can imagine what happened to him in the last few years, and Sacramento County District Attorney Tin Ho, who is a Democrat. Now, both of these men have raised about $300,000-$400,000 as of their last report. Not a small amount, but Kylie definitely has a lot more money. So we fully anticipate in the next couple months, Congressman Kylie will be swamping the airwaves trying to convince voters that somehow he is no longer a MAGA Republican by simply switching his registration to no party preference. Now, will voters fall for this? I'm kind of skeptical of it. I mean, it's a stretch. The district has a solid Democratic advantage, and Kylie, you know, it's a question worth contemplating. Kylie, on one hand, has a lot of money, so he can probably get the Republican turnout for him in the primary, as he's the only Republican in the field versus five Democrats. So there's a very good chance that he will advance to the November election, finish either number one or number two. It's very conceivable he could finish number one because the five Democrats will splinter that vote and advance. The real question in that race will be who will come in second place. Right now it looks like Tin Ho and Dr. Pan have the advantage. My sources tell me that Dr. Pan is going to get a lot of support from Big Pharma, and he's going to get a lot of support from the medical associations. Tin Ho, he's also received quite a few large donations himself. It's unclear who is going to support him. Some law enforcement agencies will support him, interestingly, as a as a district attorney and a career prosecutor with the Sacramento County District Attorney's Office. On a side note, he was the person who prosecuted the Golden State serial after he was caught a few years ago here in Sacramento. So he has support from moderates. Pan has a little bit more support from the progressives. And then the other three candidates, they're interesting. There's one, Linda Babb Tomlinson, is the local head of Planned Parenthood, and she's actively campaigning. And Tyler Vandenberg is a veteran, a young guy, I would say about 30, very charismatic, although he doesn't have much money. And the final Democratic candidate is West Sacramento Mayor Martha Guerrero, who hasn't really actively campaigned so far. So those last three are unlikely to finish in the top two or three. If I were to put a wager on it on one of the prediction markets, I would say Pan or Tin Ho will be the Democratic nominee in that race. And I think Kylie will advance. Although depending on what Mr. Ho and Dr. Pan do, they could push Kylie out at the primary. We'll be watching that in the next several months to see what happens. That's a really interesting race that has gathered national attention because of Congressman Kylie's move out of the Republican Party. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Sub Rosa News, and come back again. My name is Dan Gowerthy, and thank you for listening. We appreciate your time.